Burns on FM News 101. Zach Burns and Byron Beck here with you. And also joining us in studio is Lois Levine, the author of The Secrets of Mary Bowser, her very first book. And it's a story that I never had heard before about the Civil War. And I, not that I thought I had heard all I could possibly hear about the Civil War, but Mary Bowser, Lois, is a real person.
Yes.
Okay. Tell me about Mary Bowser, because I didn't, it's not that I didn't know her story. I never knew that any, you know, black abolitionist from the North went down South and did this.
Sure. So she was actually from the South. Mary Bowser was born in Richmond, Virginia. She was born a slave, but she was freed by the daughter of the family that owned her, a woman named Bet Van Loo, and she was sent North to be educated. That part's already a little strange. We don't usually expect that
right.
from somebody growing up owning slaves. But the more incredible part is that she went back to the South, and during the Civil War, she was a spy for the Union by pretending to be a slave in the Confederate White House.
Now, who sent her on this mission?
Well, she was part of a spy ring that the woman who had owned her, Bet Van Loo, ran. So it's a pretty extensive spy ring. And that's also kind of incredible that the Confederate capital is in Richmond, Virginia, but Virginia has lots of Unionists and
right.
lots of people who are trying to topple the Confederacy and trying to end the war on behalf of the Union.
So she was sent out. Initially, how is it? What does the process look like of her being freed? It's not like, here, take this money, just run north. How exactly was a slave freed in that era?
So that's one of the things that was really interesting to me about the book was if you were freed in Virginia, there were free blacks in Virginia. And in fact, Richmond, the black population there, 1 out of 5 blacks in the city is free. So there's a pretty substantial black population, some of whom own their own homes or businesses. But a law was passed in the 19th century that said if you were newly freed, then you had to leave the state within a year. So that means, on the one hand, you get your freedom, and who doesn't want that?
Right.
But on the other hand, you have to give up your family, your community, everything you've ever known to go some other place. And the North, there's no guarantee of you're free, but you're not equal. So discrimination in housing, education,
right.
all that stuff is perfectly legal and goes on all the time.
The common thought is that, you know, abolitionists were kind to black people, which wasn't necessarily the truth. They didn't want them enslaved any longer, but they didn't also want them doing the work that they thought a white person could do, and housing was certainly an issue. So when she was sent on this mission, she was sent to the actual Confederate White House,
mm-hmm.
where Jefferson Davis actually resided.
Right.
What kind of information was she tasked to find?
Well, this is the terrifying and wonderful part about this story, is that very little is known about what Mary Bowser actually did. So we have, in part because Bet Van Loo, after the war, goes to Washington, D.C. and asks for all of the documentation about her spying and destroys it because she doesn't want people to find out. I mean, she's still living in Richmond. She lives mm-hmm. her whole life in Richmond. So we don't know exactly what Mary Bowser did, which would be terrible if I was trying to write a biography, but was fantastic because I was writing a novel.
Right.
Perfect.
Right. Absolutely. So what kind of things did you have her discover in the novel? Not without giving away too much, obviously.
No, I hate any kind of movie review that gives away any of the plot, I scream.
Respect
so I won't
that.
Say that.
Absolutely.
I will say that I get to put her at the center of a lot of really exciting things. I can say that I was always bored to tears by studying the Civil War in school. And so part of this is not the like battle count and how many people died and which general this and which general that, but kind of the heart of the story is, I think we all can agree, I'm hoping we can all agree here in studio, that slavery was wrong.
Yes, we can
and
agree.
And slavery
on.
Needed to be ended. But the war was a horrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the number of deaths, they just recently revised the death toll. Families would send somebody off to fight in the Civil War and you'd never hear from them again. You wouldn't even necessarily be notified that they were killed, right? So 750,000 soldiers die. More civilians are also dying from disease, from hunger. And so a big part of the book is looking not just at, well, the spy part, the sort of cloak and dagger, but what's the cost of this war? And what does it mean to have the thing that you think is the most important that you want to devote your life to take such a horrific toll on your own city?
Right. Lois Levine is in studio with us. She's the author of The Secrets of Mary Bowser. And you had a reading at Powell's this
mm-hmm.
past weekend.
Packed
the
reading.
The book actually sold out. Like
yes.
there were no copies the next day.
And it's hard to find copies of the book in the city right now.
They were taken. ones that like people had mail order pre-ordered and were selling at the store, and people were walking out wanting more books.
Right, that's great. So is it film worthy? Are you going to make a film out of this?
I am not going to make a film out of this, but I certainly hope somebody will. If Oprah's production studio is listening, Harper or any of that, yeah. No, I mean...
Well, I would think that this would be perfect for film, and I would think that Hollywood would be clamoring all over it.
You know, they don't tell authors many of these little things, but I mean, I think part of it is that there are a lot of great roles for Black actors in this story, because it's not just Mary Bowser, it's the community that she's from. It's the, you know, the free Black community in Philadelphia, which is also another part of the story that nobody really knows about, is what was it like for those folks. So I think they're probably actors who'd be really excited about this.
And you've been studying the Civil War for a while. You contribute to the New York Times in regards to the Civil War. So was this a story that you kind of stumbled upon, or how did you start to learn about her?
I became interested in the Civil War because of her and not the other way around.
Oh, okay.
I really, when I was in college, could barely have told you what years the Civil War was. Right now it's, by the way, the sesquicentennial of the Civil War. Could I just get Byron to say the word sesquicentennial?
Oh, you've listened to the show. Sesquicentennial. Oh, golly, I said it.
FM News 101, this is Beck and Burns. Zach Burns, Byron Beck. And joining us in studio, the author, your debut novel, despite what Byron thinks.
Stop.
Lois Levine is in studio, and the debut novel is The Secrets of Mary Bowser, and it's pretty much sold out in the city of Portland right now.
To be fair, Byron just thought that I had written another book that was nonfiction, so I would still be a debut novelist, even if he was right, which he wasn't.
Byron also thought you painted Starry Night, so he always he gets his bio information always wrong.
So Zach and I were invited to a very cool party in your honor this weekend. We went, was it Saturday night? Yeah, it was Saturday night, at Bill and Rachel Oakley's house. Bill is this cool guy who works on Portlandia and was a showrunner for The Simpsons. You had so many cool people there. You had Peter Ames Carlin, who's finishing up his book on Springsteen. You had Daniel H. Wilson, whose new book is called Amped and is about, they're starting filming in like 2 weeks.
Not on Amped.
Robo-Apocalypse.
Robo-Apocalypse.
I said it right, by the way.
Robo-Apocalypse?
Yeah, Robo-Apocalypse.
I'm afraid he's got you again, Byron.
Oh, gosh.
Thank you.
Anyways, I was just wondering, does it help to have such cool and successful friends when you're trying to get publishers to notice you?
I think one of the things that's amazing about that party is that at some point,
I don't know how I got invited, by the way.
Because you're so cute.
Okay.
At some point, Peter was commenting on somebody and he said, that person has such an exciting life. My life is so boring. And I said, you were just talking to Bruce Springsteen the other day. Like he had mentioned in conversation, well, I was just talking to Bruce and Patty walked in and he was sort of talking about the conversation and how that went. And I think that's the weird thing as a writer is that you spend so much time sitting there, staring at the screen, writing, revising, throwing things across the room because you're not doing a good job writing or revising, that none of us feel like there's any glamour to our lives. And then people come along and say, oh, but your book just this, and you get to talk to that. And it's fascinating to us that we're fascinating to anyone.
So the book's The Secrets of Mary Bowser, it's kind of one of the unheralded but fictionalized stories, you know, because not much about Mary Bowser's accomplishments is very known. And that's where you get to possibly embellish as a fiction writer.
Mm-hmm. I bet you it's going to be Oprah Book Club. Don't you think it's going to be Oprah Book Club? I think it's going to be Oprah Book Club.
Do you know that Oprah's not... doesn't have her TV show anymore.
But she still has a magazine. I think it could be an Oprah Book Club.
I hope you're right.
Yeah, obviously every author wants that stamp on the front of her book. But when the reviews first start coming out, what is that like for you? I'm sure you try to insulate yourself from it, but you can't help but peek and see, you know, if the first couple are positive or not. And obviously you've been getting very good reviews on this. But is it nerve-wracking? Is something you even worry about?
I think that I have a lot of self-control in many respects, but on this, absolutely not.
Right.
So I knew when the Sunday Oregonian was going to come out, and of course you can pick up the Sunday Oregonian on Saturday, and I went down to my local Fred Meyer and managed not to throw up, unlike Byron before school as a child, managed not to throw up before reaching for the stack of newspapers and pulling it out, and I read it right there standing in the store, and it was a great review. And then I jumped up and down and scared the rest of the people in the produce department at Fred Meyer and bought my copy and took it home. But I don't know how anybody can resist reading the reviews.
I couldn't imagine. that would be the first thing. Good or bad. And then if it's bad, then that person's an idiot. And I would disregard them anyway.
But
right?
You can Google them and figure out what exactly was wrong with them, how damaged they were psychologically, that they didn't give you a good review.
I need to borrow that. I need to do that. That's the way to do it. That's the way I'm going to handle all my critics.
Yeah, exactly. Disregard them and find what's wrong with them and then exploit that. it's interesting, too. You have a lot of reviews and favorable ones. Obviously, I'm reading the collection of them on your website from other authors. And I was just wondering, is there now pressure now if they send you a book, even if you dislike it, to give them a positive blurb?
You are never supposed to feel like you have to say anything that you don't think is true. And so there are all these kind of codes like the, I would love to do that, but I owe my editor a manuscript right now, which is sometimes true. Sometimes you are, locked in a room and you can't do anything and you can't read anything. And sometimes, I'm not going to finish that sentence.
So it's the secrets. Did you expect when you did a reading of Powell's on Friday night, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Did you expect the turnout? Did you know that there was a lot of buzz about the book going into the reading, or were you kind of just shocked at the crowd?
It's sort of a mix. I mean, obviously you expect your friends to turn out, and they did, but there were lots of people there I didn't know. And we actually didn't have necessarily, we had the Oregonian Review, but I hadn't, because of scheduling, hadn't done a lot of, here I am doing the radio show after the reading as opposed to before. So there wasn't a lot of that. So it really meant that people had sought out the reading, and that was very exciting. So we'll see as we get more media.
You're about to go on a whirlwind tour, right? Are you going to Alabama?
Tomorrow I'm going up to Seattle, and then after that I'm going to Birmingham, Alabama.
And who are you speaking to in Birmingham? Are you doing a book reading or?
I'm doing an event at Books A Million, which is a large bookstore chain like Barnes & Noble. Yeah.
Is this kind of going to be, is this your niche? Are you going to be a Civil War historical novelist, or is this the story from the Civil War?
She made a face like.
Is this the one you wanted to tell, and now you're going to move on to something else?
Yeah, I do have a next project that I'm working on, which is totally different. And part of it it's like a palate cleanser. Like it's not even located in the United States, so it's still historical. It's somebody that you have all heard of, so I don't have to go around saying no. It's Bowser, not Bauer, as I've already had to do.
Right. I said I'm little Bow Wow on my...
Yes. I did become obsessed by the Civil War. Like, there's a point where you realize...
How could you not? It's an amazing part of our culture.
Really? I'm charmed to hear that you think that.
Oh, yeah. I'm obsessed with the Civil War.
Say some more.
Not now. I find that whole time very fascinating. I think because part of my family was part of it. My great-grandmother worked for Ulysses S. Grant, and there's lots of stories and lots of, neither were bad or good. It was just a terrible time in our history.
Well, and I think, so there are a few things there that have really become clear to me as I started talking about the book. One is how many people feel this personal connection to the Civil War, some family member, or just some sense of, I lived in Virginia and I lived near Gettysburg in Pennsylvania. And so people can feel really attached to it in a personal way, but also that in some ways it is the crucible in which the nation was forged.
Sure.
And yet, as I said before, just the level of horror that it entailed. I mean, I don't think that we can conceptualize that level of death and suffering as a day-to-day event, and then it carries on even after the war is over. People are amputees.
Exactly. And it's interesting to me too, and you have to come back and tell us, I'm sure you've been to the South before, but it's the history of it is so much more prevalent there, and the feelings surrounding it are so strong and everywhere, partially due to the fact that you still see the Confederate flag quite commonly down there, but it seems like the Civil War and all the history that goes along with it is still so much more top of mind in the South than it is in the North.
I think part of it is the local, right? That if you drive from Washington, D.C. to Richmond, Virginia, it's like every exit on the freeway is the name of a Civil War battlefield. So it's literally right there. But there's also, so we're at the sesquicentennial of the Civil War. That thing about flying the Confederate flag over state houses and buildings, that all actually started at the centennial of the Civil War, which think about it, 1860s puts us into 1960. So it's a kind of moment where the civil rights movement is heating up, and there's a lot of, we're not going to take that here. So a lot of places that are resisting that reclaim this Confederate identity. And I think that that's part of why there's so much attention being paid now to the sesquicentennial of the Civil War, of wanting to say, well, you know, it's been not just 150 years, but 50 years of amazing progress.
Is there any way for you to see the Confederate flag as merely a token of remembrance of history and not a symbol of racism?
I don't know about the Confederate flag because of the way that it gets used. And I think that a lot of the people who might cling to that flag, really their families were not necessarily well off under the antebellum period or the Confederacy. They were not necessarily people who owned slaves and had a lot of money. And if you were white and didn't own slaves, it was hard to compete economically. So it wasn't necessarily great for all white Southerners. I do think that the former White House of the Confederacy, where a lot of the book is set, because that's where the spying is happening, is now called the Museum of the Confederacy. And you can go and tour the rooms and see where Mary Bowser was and see where the Jefferson Davis and Verena Davis and their family were. And when I say, oh, yeah, the Museum of the Confederacy, people look at me like, oh, that must be this horribly retrograde, you know, the South will rise again institution. And it's not. It's a museum. The historians who staff it are dedicated historians. So I think that there are lots of ways to commemorate the Confederacy.
It's very important to remember it. It's very important to remember these as human beings, too, that these were good people doing bad things. I mean, as simplistic as that sounds, it's so important that we remember this part of because we're doomed to repeat certain aspects of it.
And, you know, one of the weirdest things I read when I was doing research was this guy who was from Louisiana, which New Orleans gets captured by the Union early in the war. So he's a refugee in Richmond. He's away from his family. And he's writing about it's his diary that's published. And he's a jerk. I mean, he's racist. And he's anti-Semitic. And he's just, people are like dying of cholera and all these diseases. And he's complaining about his hemorrhoids. Literally, that's what he's doing. But at the end of each diary entry, he writes, because he's away from his wife and children, he writes a little message to them and says how much he loves them and misses them. And even this jerk, like I could cry reading those parts of his passages, that we're all human. And how do you reconcile that against the enormity of terrible things that were done? Yeah.
Well, Lois Levine, the book's called The Secrets of Mary Bowser.
I'm so excited about this book.
It's great. I'm about 150 pages in, and it's an excellent book. And I'm not just saying that because you're here. I would trash it if I needed to, and then you could find out what was psychologically wrong with me and exploit that.
But
I have no
need. And you can order it online, right?
And I think that some of the downtown Powell's location was out, but it's at some of the other Powell's around town and other bookstores around town as well.
Lois Levine, The Secrets of Mary Bowser, thank you so much for coming in.
Quite welcome.
Coming in, we're going to be talking.